This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Jackie O and you're listening to Militantly Mixed.
Yo, this is Rashani from the Single Simulcast. And when I'm not making you laugh or making up parody songs, I'm kicking back, listening to Militantly Mixed.
Main Hustle Media podcasts are recorded on the ancestral lands of the Chumash, Tongva, Karankwa, and Hohokam people. And I wish to pay my respects to the people of those nations, both past and present.
Konnichi, what's up, primos? Welcome to Militantly Mixed, the podcast about race and identity from the mixed race perspective. I am your sir auntie, Charmaine Fury, and this is the 11th installment of the Mixed Auntie Confidential episodes with myself and Auntie Teresa Stovall. I don't normally record an intro for these episodes. I usually just jump right in with Teresa. But because of the time we recorded this, we were in talks about changing the submission date, extending the submission date to the Be Your Mix as Self anthology. We just hadn't settled on a date yet. So I'm jumping on real fast to let y'all know, or remind you, if you heard last week's episode, that we have extended the date for the Be Your Mix as Self anthology. You can now submit up until April 15th, and same type of thing, 11:59 p.m. April 15th Eastern Time will be the final submission date for the Be Your Mix as Self anthology. So if you were considering entering something, but it was starting to feel like it was getting too close to time, you now have that extra month to work on your essay, nonfiction essays, and or your poems about being your mix as self. Thank you to everybody who submitted so far. We've continued to get more submissions since announcing that we were extending our deadline. At the time I am recording this, I'm a week away from this episode dropping. Tomorrow I go out of town for 3 days to Austin, Texas to speak at the BIPOC Pop Fest at UT. I will be moderating a panel on superheroic indigeneities, and I will be sitting on a panel of queering BIPOC representation in comics and media. And then on the 13th, I'm supposed to have dental surgery. So by the time this airs on the 14th, I won't have been able to update y'all on what's going on. And so I just wanted to make sure that I get this done before I get out of town so that it airs on time. In addition to that, the episode that's going to follow on the 21st will also have been pre-recorded also. I mean, it's already edited and everything. I just need to record the intro for that as well. So most likely there, I won't have any updates for y'all either. This next 2 weeks is pretty much action-packed all the way through. I have something to do every single day until the day that I move. And so I want to make sure that I get these episodes locked and loaded and ready to go so that I can make my transition to Mexico really smoothly. And the April mental health hiatus is taking effect just like it normally does. It just happens to also be my move month. So I'll be letting myself settle into Mexico during the month of April, and I will come back to podcasting on the first week of May, just like I normally do. So I'll do my best to post some things on social media from time to time, but you may not hear from me unless I get bored or unless I feel like I should do an update. You may not hear from me until after I get settled in Mexico, with the exception of the already edited and almost ready to be loaded episodes that will finish out the month of March. So don't forget to be your mix as selves, everybody. If you want to submit to the Be Your Mix as Self anthology, please do so. We still have an extra month now for you to do it. And without further ado, please join me in welcoming back our favorite mix auntie, Teresa Stovall, for the Mix Auntie Confidential episode 11. Today, I am joined again by fellow mixed auntie,
Teresa Stovall, Mixnanti Confidential. Hey, hey, hey.
This is our 11th installment of the Mixnanti Confidential episodes. And every time we get together for a Mixnanti Confidential, this is always like a culmination of like a week or two's worth of back and forth in the DMs because some issue has popped up and has made me crazy or you crazy. And we get into it. Like, is this an episode? And while this has been kind of a topic that we've been sort of touching on in patches throughout, it's something, I guess, that we'll probably deal with a lot because it's sort of so, it's happening so much more often. And we are very much confused by it because of the generations that we come from as what's happening. And so basically with last month being Black History Month, something that started to happen in the last 4 to 5 years that you would see, or maybe it always has happened, but it's just become more obvious in the last 4 or 5 years, is that there's always somebody that pops up to have some sort of anti-inclusion, anti-community-based message. And what was happening a lot this last February was I was seeing a lot of TikToks and a lot of like posts that was sort of against the Lift Every Voice, what's considered the Black national anthem, Lift Every Voice, the song. And during the month of February, you hear that song a lot. And if you grew up in the Black church, or you grew up in the South, you probably still hear it a lot, not just in February, but in February, it becomes really public. And I started to see two different kinds of anti-Lift Every Voice TikToks, one of which I did share with Teresa, which was a Black, white, biracial woman who came on to basically give off the message that, as a mixed Black person, they didn't need a Lift Every Voice. They didn't need a separate national anthem from America. I'm an American. I need an American national anthem. Forgetting the nuance, or not even knowing the nuance or the history or anything as to why a song like Lift Every Voice is considered a Black national anthem. On the flip side of that, I was also seeing predominantly Black male TikToks and posts, which I think is very specific to name the categories of folks that were giving this message, that was also saying the very same thing. We don't need a separate Black national anthem. We're Americans, da, 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 da. And so while I do understand the idea of American inclusion and this desire that us as this quote unquote melting pot, that we would want to all be considered Americans, even though a lot of us are not, even though we're born here and generationally from here, this message that keeps popping up, the sort of anti-community based, or at least in my view of it, anti-community based message of we don't need something that lifts us up, as being a way to justify sort of mixed separation or Black gatekeeping from who we are as mixed people. Teresa and I both come from, while different generations, we both come from generations where we were Black, even though we were also mixed, and we weren't Black in an exclusionary kind of way where like everything else we're mixed with didn't matter. We were acknowledged as just being part of Blackness because historically here in America, if you are a descendant of the African slave trade, you were Black. You just were Black, right? Again, it didn't exclude what else you were mixed with, but you were welcomed in Blackness. You were included in Blackness. You were Black. In the last 4 to 5 years, we're starting to see that is sort of disappearing. So we wanted to get into today the topic of, are we moving away from and going towards either or? Black gatekeeping and mixed separatism sort of working hand in hand, although not together. So I don't know what to say about it. We've been gabbing about it. But I want to work it out. So let's get into it. Let's get into this very weird and uncomfortable topic.
Weird, uncomfortable, timely, and I think for both of us, kind of strangely fascinating.
It is.
And concerned. And so I think that for this conversation, we're both in hyper auntie mode.
Big time.
Because we're looking at, generalizing here, but the youngins.
Meaning, we want to help the babies. That's why we're the mix aunties.
That's what, Lord, what the baby's doing this time. Have you noticed the babies? And that's really what it is. I mean, we've kind of divvied up social media generationally a little bit. Mm. So I spend way too much time, y'all, in the many dozens of mixed Facebook groups and mixed adjacent Facebook groups. Y'all don't even want to know. One day.
Oh, goodness.
That's like my job. And then Instagram, we cross on Instagram.
We cross on
and
Instagram.
And then Charmaine, bless her, it scours the TikToks.
I go through the tickety-tocks.
She gets the ticket and then she sends me the one. So y'all, it actually makes sense because we're covering more social media ground than we could. And I'm somebody who defected from Twitter when Musk decided to take over. But I, in all the years I've been on Twitter, and I like Twitter in a lot of ways, I never really saw our conversations being a thing on Twitter. Now, maybe I just wasn't following the right people, but I didn't TikTok, Instagram, Facebook.
Right.
Okay.
I was on Black Twitter, and now there is a Black Twitter app. It's literally called blacktwitterapp.com. Oh. It's not an app on your phone yet. It's just a website, blacktwitterapp.com. It looks exactly like Twitter, but you have to answer gatekeep questions to get into it. And guess what the question is?
How many Black grandparents do you have?
No, thank goodness it's not. But it's what belongs on grits? And there's two options.
Oh, girl, that's not even okay. We are not gonna have that conversation. I will get triggered.
I know, me too.
There are not two options.
So it exists.
I should be able to get in.
It exists.
I do miss Black Twitter, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. And right now, like, I'm on there with like one other friend, like where I haven't started, like, I don't know if enough people know about it or whatever yet. So it's a little bit hard, but yeah, it exists. But yeah, this is something that's been coming up a lot lately. And, this combination. And so like, you're a boomer and you talk about being a boomer. I'm an Xennial, which means I'm right on the cusp of both Gen X and millennials. But I'm an old Xennial. Like, I have a Gen X mindset more than a millennial mindset.
And you have kind of some boomer heart. I just want to say
I do. I have boomer knees and back, I guess is what I want to say.
I didn't mean physiologically, but also on a vibe level, right? Yeah,
that's what I mean by the knees and the back. Like, I basically I've been talking about needing to be in a dry heat since I was like 5 years old. I definitely have an older spirit to me, which is why I think it's such a shark. And so before we get into the topic that we've been talking about, I always tend to go back to this because for me, I think this was the pivotal moment, and you were there for it, that my brain started to be less in denial that this was happening and more starting to be aware of it happening. And that is when we had our first Mixanti confidential discussion with Sonia Smith King and Dr. Yaba Blay. And there was, and I think I might have even referenced it last time too. This is how often it has like been one of these, like I can trace things back to this moment. And that's when Dr. Blay had said about mixed people, like, why do you claim mix? You know, nobody wants you over there. We have you. Nobody else wants you over there. Or they don't want you, basically, about white folks. And that was the moment that I guess that's the dividing line, right? Like, we all were from the generation where if you were mixed, you were Black. And I've said many times, and you know, I'm mixed, yeah, but I'm Black. Like, that's my identity. So with Dr. Yaba Blay, I had explained that I didn't become mixed out in the world until I left my Black neighborhood that I grew up in. And that's when the world started to tell me they didn't see me as Black. And so my identity almost kind of got forced into adjusting, whether I realized that that's what's happened, that happened or not, mm-hmm. kind of forced me into a mixed identity, because up until then I was a Black kid who everybody knew had a Japanese mom. That didn't take me out of Blackness. It didn't make me not Black enough. I'm sure I had those moments here and there with an individual person invalidating me, but in mass, in my community and my network and everything, I was a Black kid. I just happened to have a Japanese mom. Then I left that neighborhood, and then the world told me they didn't see me as Black. And so I, that's when I had to, didn't know any different, tell people I was mixed, and then sort of developed a mixed personality, I guess, if you want to say that, because of it, because the world told me they didn't see me as Black. Mm-hmm. And when I explained that to Dr. Blay, it was like, oh, okay. So sometimes you're forced into it. Right. And in my case, I can absolutely admit I was sort of forced into being publicly mixed. What that turned into with me being militantly mixed podcast host and things like that is different. Cause it's now that's 20 years later. And so that I get into that kind of thing. But for most of my life and where I still sit right now, I think of myself as a Black person who happens to be mixed. You also.
Absolutely. So yeah. So unlike you, I've always said I'm mixed and I'm Black. I mean, they've never been diametrically opposed to each other. They've never been separate for me.
They actually mean kind of the same thing. Yeah.
Well, the mixed, back to our last episode, y'all.
Yeah.
We talked about the 1619 Project, that there is no American history. There is no Black American or African American history without including mixed Black people. You just can't separate the strands. They are too inextricably woven together. So that was more the point, is that people were not processing these in separate lanes. Mm-hmm. There were not separate lanes. We were all thrown onto this one road together. And again, you know, for context, I'm born in the Pacific Northwest. I'm from Seattle, but my Black dad and my Jewish mom, Jews were not white at that time, caveat, were from the North and married in Seattle, where there were no anti-miscegenation laws, but there were anti-miscegenation laws, such an ugly word. But anyway, in 16 states, I was born during Jim Crow segregation, when it was still alive in the South, when Black people didn't, there was no illusion of having full rights. I desegregated some Seattle schools, okay, for 10 out of 12 years of public school education. So that's for context. Mm-hmm. So nobody was like, you're not Black. You're not Black enough. You don't look Black. Also, there were a lot of Creoles because people migrated from Louisiana. So the way I looked was not an issue, is the same as you, West Coast. Was not an issue either. But the bigger picture is, the big change is that both Black and mixed Black, and there are individual exceptions, y'all. We're talking about collective societal rule here. Mm-hmm. There are always individual exceptions. Sure. Okay. But the collective societal historical rule, sociological rule, was that mixed Black and Black were and, because in just a generation or two back, first of all, same generation, segregation was still going. And so a couple generations before that, somebody was probably enslaved. Mm-hmm. And so you were a slave or you were free. Those were the racial categories, okay? You were a slave and you were free. And that's where One Drop comes from. And I understand the pushback now, but let's circle around to that. So in my experience, and up until the last few years, my lived experience, observed experience, and everything else, mixed Black and Black were not separate. Nobody was divided. There wasn't a dividing line. Mm-hmm. We were not either or. We were and. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are layers and levels and hierarchy and colorism and classism and all the things. Mm-hmm. Those have always been there. They have always been there. To say you were Black was not to deny any of that. It was to understand all of that. It was to acknowledge all of that. And it was to understand the origins and the functionality of all those dynamics. But that was all a part, as the late great, one of my favorite artists and writers said, there were 360 degrees of Blackness. Mm. Bill Scott Heron. 360 degrees of Blackness. Okay. So you wasn't, so all of a sudden, well, now what we're moving from with Black American identity, and this is mostly with young folks, and mixed Black American identity. And I like to keep it specific to this country right now, because different
countries, that's where we live in.
And that's our experience.
That's our experience.
It's not that we're not open to other perspectives and comparisons, but I think for right now, we're just trying to make a really strong point that for the first time in US history, okay, there, it looks like there's a separatist movement. Mm-hmm. And as you said, and I wrote it down because it's such a good quote, so I'm going to quote you right now in the same episode in which you transitioned. Working hand in hand, but not together. Girl, that's a t-shirt. Okay, so that is a wonderful, wonderful description of young mixed Black folks and some Black folks. And we say Black folks who both parents were Black or identified as Black. We're not running DNA tests and
counting. Right. Yeah.
Up in here, what you eat on your grits, I don't want to know about because I'll get triggered. So I get triggered with my own children after talking about that. So anyway, okay, haha. But anyway, we'll do a whole session, the whole app on grits. But seriously, working hand in hand, but not together. So what we're seeing, and as I described a moment ago, between the two of us, we've got a lot of social media covered. We both, this is our full time for the most part work.
Yeah.
I would say Charmaine's full time work is multiple intersectional and evolutionary identities. And she is my role model, tutor, and guide in a lot of those, and mentor in a lot of those things. But for racial, multiracial, mixed race, biracial identity, it's full-time gig for really for the most part for both.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I get up and scour the groups and look in the groups and participate in conversations or just observe or, you know, all those things every day.
Yeah.
And so I think we have a very good overview of this developing dynamic. And this is a dynamic I think everybody needs to pay attention to.
Right.
The reasons we're going to talk about and the questions we're going to pose here. And everybody needs to really do some soul searching about if you're in either of these groups. So whether you're in, and we're using monoracial Black in the term to differentiate from people who are identified as mixed, not to argue and go for purity of definition.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
They're the best words we can use to describe what we're talking about. And while there is a lot of focus on specifically on mixed Blackness on this show, that has more to do with the fact that we are both mixed Black. So that's the experience that we can speak from.
Yes.
And we both have a primary identity as Black versus the rest of the kind of thing. That being said, this isn't exclusive necessarily to any other mixed group or types of people, because a version of this kind of separation or togetherness happens in all categories. I also experienced it from the Asian American side. And separate from the Asian American side, the Japanese side, because Japanese has a different view of Asianness too. So this crosses. It's just that in the way that we can see it in mass right now, or probably is what is more obviously available, is in American Blackness, which also includes mixed Black people. You know, we're all, it's all one.
Yes. Because it's the loudest and most controversial because it reflects the country we're in.
Exactly. The heartbeat of this country starts with enslavement.
With enslavement, with white supremacy, with anti-Blackness, period.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, so I love this. So what we've got right now are these separate tracks forming.
Mm-hmm.
So moving from and into either or.
Mm-hmm.
So we simultaneously have what I call a there. When I was growing up and until very recently with mixedness, well, I always said I was mixed in everything else, and I've always, you know, been into it as an identity. There was never a space, a defined space. Social media has given us that.
Right.
Okay. A collective spaces and collective conversations and all kinds of things. And so there's a there now, but this is very new. It's in its infancy. It's in its infancy. You know, it's very new, maybe just 5 years max. And it's happening. And what you're seeing, what I think we're seeing in this lane is the result of several things, objectively speaking. Number one, we've now had three census cycles, 2010, 2020, mm-hmm. where there's a multiracial option. Mm-hmm. And so you've got numbers. The census data can now spit out numbers. This many people identify as multiracial. Then you have, again, coming out of census and other government data, birth rates of children, which are still, race is still recorded, apparently. So, you know, the multiracial birth rate is, you know, zoomed up by over 100% or whatever the percentages are. Mm-hmm. Everybody's aware of it. This fuels chatter. It doesn't only fuel chatter, it fuels popular culture. You'll notice especially a lot of either mixed families, couples, or ambiguous people in advertising and entertainment. Why? Mm-hmm. Because in advertising and entertainment, let's face it, bang for buck, they want to appeal visually to as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So ambiguity becomes a commodity, but that's, just briefly. So all these things are happening, and a lot of it, and this isn't good or bad, this is just fact, a lot of this at the same time, when President Barack Hussein Obama became the president of the United States, leader, one of the most powerful leaders in the world, and processed as Black, identified as Black and all that, but we also knew it was also, every single description of him was Black father from Kenya, white mother from Kansas. Mm-hmm. They were working that alliteration. Mm-hmm. So it was very clear he was biracial. He was very clear he was biracial. So all those things started converging, and then we got social media. And then we got social media, right? Yeah. And all of a sudden we're creating spaces and we're finding ways. Everybody's expressing themselves. Fast forward to 2023, right? So here we are with the younger folks. Everybody's expressing themselves. There's no barrier to entry. As long as you've got internet and a device, You can pontificate. And it's a beautiful, fabulous, wonderful, brilliant, amazing thing. The democratization of communication. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the other thing that happens is it's right now it's completely wild, and maybe it will always be, and maybe it should be, but you're also, everybody's expressing themselves and you're seeing these lanes being created.
Yeah.
So you're seeing a lot of mixed Black people, not wanting to be identified with Blackness, as you, the example you said of the young woman in the TikTok, we don't need a Black national anthem. Mm-hmm. I don't need anything separate from being an American. Okay. So you've got that, and you've also got mixed, for to talk about this lane, and then I want your thoughts. You also got mixed Black people who are in this lane because they've been gatekept out of Black places.
So hurt people. Mm. They could have gotten, even if it's just one time, they could have gotten excluded in some way, and that has filtered out into this, well, if I'm not accepted, then I'm not going to accept type of mentality. And, that is what it is. Everybody responds to different things differently. And even if it happens a lot of times, maybe that's how this types of personality forms. I don't know. It's not my story. So I don't have the answer to it, I guess, but yeah.
When a lot of them grow up in whiteness with a white parent, I mean, we know that. We've talked about that a lot too. Some of them might want to connect with the Black part of their identities or their Blackness, and especially maybe as children or coming up, simply weren't able to, other than maybe in an indirect way via the internet or entertainment.
Sure,
or something, but we're not able to for whatever reason. And it's not their fault. But again, they might feel, you see a lot of talk about racial imposter syndrome with mixed folks. They might feel like they can't go into these spaces.
There's so many ways that this surfaces. Small examples are good, or what I think is a good example is if anybody watched Colin Kaepernick Black and White, there's the scene where his white adopted mother finally lets him go and get Iverson braids, braids that look like Iverson, right? And when before that, he has like a friend at school do his hair, right? And she says something about him having mixed hair, you can't grab it as much or whatever. And so she makes that thing, and so he gets these braids that are just so tight that he can't function with it. So the question of needing to find a person who knows how to braid mixed hair is just, it's not like she's saying you're not Black, but it's still an invalidating moment, right? Because like your hair is not exactly like, but like, so it's one of those things that a person could internalize. But it's something like that. Like if you use something like that as an example of how you're not quote Black enough,
or the same as,
then, if you internalize that can surface in some kind of way at some point later on down the line. Right. So it could be moments like that where it's accidentally invalidating just because it's just pointing out a difference. And as humans, we all know that while a lot of us like to be unique, we want to be uniquely the same a lot. Like that's just the way, especially as teenagers, yeah. Like that's just like
we want to be accepted into the collective.
Into the collective. And so a moment like that, that's accidentally invalidating could surface in a different way. And then there's those more explicit ones where someone's literally telling you, you're not like me and therefore you're not like us. And you know, that has a different.
Yes. And I think too, and this, I've really only seen and heard this a lot post 2020, post George mm-hmm. Floyd, Breonna Taylor, et cetera. As with the Black gatekeepers. And there's validity to this, by the way. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, I never heard it coming up. You might not have, but they'll look at us or even any mixed Black person, regardless of what they look like, and say, you're not going to get perceived and treated the same way I am, especially if I'm dark skinned and phenotypically mm-hmm. Black, not phenotypically, right. What are you?
Right.
Okay. So, and that is a fact.
That's a fact. And I mean, it's fair assessment.
Yeah, it is fair. Yeah. It is a fact. It is absolutely true.
It's not designed to hurt feelings. It's just the fact.
It's a fact. But I think that this is the first time in history that designation or like, you know, you were talking about, you got to have 8 Black grandparents. Somebody said, you know, and I'm like,
that was a tweet.
How many Black Americans got 8 Black grandparents? I'll wait.
I would love to meet them, I'll right? Wait. Like, I would love to meet them. I'm sure there's a
or
few
great grandparents
there.
Or however many,
yeah.
You know, generations to go back. I'll wait. But the point is that you're not, if you know, George Floyd became the icon. Mm-hmm. And so if you were not phenotypically, then, and we're coming in, I think there's another layer to it with the gatekeeping that helps me understand the gatekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. I,
which is that we mixed people and light-skinned Black people. This is, mm-hmm. I'm putting us all together for the purposes of this conversation because it comes under colorism. It comes under the weaponization of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies have always been weaponized to support white supremacy and anti-Blackness from day one on first plantation, where first raped, enslaved African woman gave
right.
birth.
Okay, right.
Our bodies are still weaponized. And so as a result, and I get some of the resentment, and I think the colorism argument is very, very valid and very real. We can't deny it. There's no reason to deny it. That often, if you put us, people who look like us, mixed Black people, in a Black space, we are centered, mm-hmm. we are elevated, we are prioritized in and Black fetishized. Spaces by Black people.
Yes.
I'm just talking about in Black context now. Yes, in other contexts, but I'm one of us to be real specific here.
Right.
As a result, and I always am a fan of consciousness awareness, okay? As a result, some of these young Black people are tired of that. Right. And it's not always that we, the ones in this position, because there's a whole system we're born into that creates this dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily walking room saying center me.
Right.
I'm the yellowest one in here. I got the straight.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, no, it's just you, especially if you spend time in Black spaces, you understand that this is pre-existing condition.
Yeah. You can both be sort of victimized and beneficiary of.
Yes. You can be privileged and victimized. I like that. Privileged and victimized by Black folks.
Yeah.
Because we're all operating from that same system.
White supremacy is insidious. Yeah.
We're all operating from it. Nobody is exempt. There is no vaccine, honey.
Right.
So you want to do the work. You got to do the work.
Yeah.
You know, but so I think I can understand and empathize with.
Sure. Yeah.
And even identify with, because I'm Black identified, and even identify with if somebody says to me, you know what, you can't come in this space right now because you've always been centered. It's not you, Teresa, the specific individual who's walked right. in being a diva demanding everything. It's just that if you're in this room, we are all unconsciously going to center you, prioritize you, make you, better. Put you in that's a position right. of betterness. I get that. And I think that's valid. I think, however, what I haven't seen yet, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but if it exists, please help me and us become aware of it, that there are nuanced conversations like this going on to help people understand why it's happening. So yes. If I'm 20 years old and I go into a Black space and I, Nagar, you can't come in here unless mm-hmm. you show us eight great grand or whatever.
Yeah, the eight great grandparents.
We're not just letting you in because you eat the right kind of grits, but you know, all of that. I'm 20 years old. I'm 15 years old. It's going to impact my sense of self. I just happen to be immune because I'm old. Let's be honest. I'm old. You can tell me that right now. I'd be like, okay, baby, you're going to retrofit almost 70 years. You go right ahead.
Sure. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck. But the point is, it's not an individual thing. So for the young folks, I think this is really important for these conversations to be happening, saying we just need you to move to the side for a minute because we've never been allowed to have
just not black centered, people
to have an affinity space. You know, I'm a fan of affinity spaces, an affinity space where it's just us, where we can work out our stuff.
Yeah. And to me, I think this is also a good example of militancy too, that people have been confused about from me, from the way that I move in the past, where when something is an exclusive black space, I ask the question, with me being mixed, should I show up or no? And I don't mean it I'm not like, oh, poor little mixed girl. It's nothing. No. It's nothing like that. It's legitimately like, if this needs to be a celebratory, fully black space, even if somebody's mix maybe is more present, their presentation is more obviously black than mine, I want that to be a safe and sacred space. I don't want my presence to pull the focus because I know that whether I try or not, it will. And what you have to do in that is release your ego. This is not about, like you said, you, Teresa, me, Charmaine. This is not about you, specific mixed person or light skinned person in the moment. This is about this greater story. Okay, with this greater story, that's not a place for me to be in. I need to back out of that. It's also kind of why I created Militantly Mixed, because not only do I need to have my own sense of community and things like that too, I also need to have this kind of open conversation to show when I'm going to mess up and when I don't mess up, you know, like when I kind of figure it out. Like, I figured out that while I may have a predominant black identity, the world may perceive me more in my mixedness than not. And so in creating a mixed space, this will be a place where we can work this shit out privately.
Yes.
You know, in community. Yes. So that when we unleash ourselves on those monoracial spaces or something like that,
our weaponized selves.
Yeah. Then we, you know, we can be more thoughtful and more present. And I think that this kind of goes, if we're going to go straight into rabbit holes, that this kind of also goes back to an earlier conversation on a previous episode of Militantly Mixed, when we're talking about, say, a black, white, biracial person raised in whiteness becoming an activist for the first time and them entering an activism space with all their whiteness, not realizing that what people are perceiving is them in their whiteness and not their physical form.
Exactly.
So we need to release our egos about the specific individual mixed person we are when we enter these monoracial spaces, and understand that some things need to be gatekept for the greater safety.
Absolutely. You know, I agree with you 100%. And I remember when we were first considering this, it's now been 3 years, and you gave me language. So I thank you for that always, which is what you just said. Hi, I'm super black identified, but I'm also mixed, and this is what I look like. And I want to make sure before I enter this space, again, a space where nobody knows me. If it's a space where people know me, then that's one thing, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But if it's a new space, and Zoom, by the way, has created a whole new dynamic, because I've got to look at myself and go, oh my God, you need to get outside. But anyway, I have never looked like this, y'all. This
I know. I have the, never. The paleness is the
great. And then I'm wearing a mask, which doesn't help. But anyway, I do the same thing. I've also stopped. I'm a writer. I'm an author. And I get there's a lot of opportunities for Black women to contribute to anthologies or apply for jobs. And I always and sometimes the people are, if they ask me specifically and they know me and it's a Black person asking, mm-hmm. I'll be like, okay. But otherwise, and I had to train myself to do this in the last 3 years.
It's uncomfortable at first.
It's hard because you're changing your hard drive.
Yeah.
Right? I've never had to ask myself, do I belong? Right? Yeah. So you're changing your hard drive. And I said, well, it isn't whether I belong or not. It's exactly what you said. And I love the way you said it. I don't want to intrude on, even with best intentions, on a safe and sacred space where, again, my body's been weaponized. Mm-hmm. Your body's been weaponized, you know, probably always will be. So when you take ownership of that, uncomfortable, painful, and horrible as it is, mm-hmm. you then can objectively look at yourself and say, I don't need to insert this weaponized right. persona into every space. I like to check it out, feel it out, mm-hmm. make sure, right, that it's okay in a way. Like you said, it's not beige tears, centering myself. It's like, just want to check. It's so maybe this analogy works. She'll tell me if I mess this up. So if I were to become aware, I think the best language is cis hetero, mm-hmm. woman, female person.
Yes.
Okay. The boring ones. Anyway. let's say there's an opportunity to enter, you give me the language, a queer space.
Okay. Yeah.
For mixed people.
Yeah, we can say a mixed
person. I would, and I would say, okay, well, they're not specifying. I would ask. I would say, listen, I'm really interested, and I'd love to hang out with y'all, but let us be clear. If this needs to be, I love your word, safe, sacred affinity space, mm-hmm. and I'm not, you know, I shouldn't come in, please let me know, because the point, y'all, is the bigger concern is for the well-being of the collective, even if it hurts your feelings, even if it gut punches your ego, yeah. and yeah. even if it messes with your sense of self. And that's yeah. hard.
And that's something you take back home, right? Like, so what I say in things now, I will say it's 11 billion times easier for me to exclude myself from a space now than it was even 3 years ago.
Yeah, me too.
While I think I've been doing this work for a while, and I absolutely have, like, I one thought popped into my mind of a specific Black film production group that I'm in, and they were having a meetup, and this was pre George Floyd, this was pre-pandemic, this was the whole thing, and I was invited by somebody who was not one of the leaders, so I reached out to the leader, and I was like, listen, I've been in the group for a while, but I am mixed, and I do look very ambiguous. So is this a comfortable space for me? You know, like I don't want to pull focus. You know, I did the whole thing. And it was like one of the early times of me trying to do this. And they were like, girl, shut up. You know, it was exactly. like, it was that kind of thing. Right. But it created a question in the group. So she did end up saying, like, you know, this haven't happened before. So I'm going to put it to the group. We got a mixed person who's been in the group for a while. You're familiar with them, but like, are you, if we go to this and you saw them, does that change the dynamic of this being a pro-Black space? And most people said, no, you know, your family, your one, most of it was the one of us type of thing. But there was another biracial guy that was in there who's married to a white woman. Mm-hmm. And so he gets on and says, I'm glad to hear that this is a, you know, still mixed, but it makes me ask the question, since I'm married to a white woman, could my wife come? And then he specifically said, she's German, she's not American, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they said, thank you for asking. This is a Black space. So if you are Black or mixed Black identified, this is a Black space. But if your spouses are not, and then she said, and that goes for everybody in the group. If your spouses are not, let's go ahead and exclude those spouses. Yep. Most people were cool with it. Everybody was like, understand, because the spouses were only there as a plus one anyway. So they're not really here for the film stuff either. So we ended up being very film focused Black production people.
Yes.
And so by the time I got there, I felt comfortable being there. Yes. I didn't have to explain anything or whatever. I mean, most people said, were you the mixed one that asked the question? And I was like, yeah, because I'm the most ambiguous of the mixed folks here. Yeah. Like, it's not like I couldn't spot some, you know, potentially mixed people, but I was the most.
Absolutely.
Ambiguous looking one.
There's got to be a level of self-awareness, y'all, that you separate from your ego and even from your own identity.
Yeah. Because they, again, it's just like if you're a mixed person and you're walking down the street, like, and I go back to the Deontay Wright story, right? Where the white mother said, I thought my whiteness would protect my child.
Yep.
I don't have enough time. Once you see my face, I don't have enough time for you to see my history and understand how pro-Black of a person I am
right.
to say, yes, you're fine. That doesn't come with me immediately. It's what you learn about me over time. And so I can't hold other people, I can't hold it against other people where they see me and have an instant reaction, because no. they're not just having an interaction to me as a person. They're having an instant reaction to the historic oppression of our people as a collective. And I am a reminder of that, even if technically my family was chosen mixed, right? Like maybe in the past they weren't, but let's say in the last at least two generations they were. We could say that they were in the last two generations. That's not enough.
Right.
It's not enough history for that to be not a question. And so once I was able to figure that out and release the ego about it, like I said, now it's not even hard for me to ask a question anymore. It's an immediate thing. And in the way that I ask it, I feel I've cultivated a question that is both thoughtful and not like to make you uncomfortable about my issue. You know, it's really just like, this is important to me. If this is a sacred space, a darker skin space, whatever the thing is, a moderation space, whatever. I need to know that so that I keep myself out of it and won't center myself, and I don't feel bad anymore. I mean, I guess what happens in terms of the feeling bad part is that thing that I think we all go through, is sometimes it's like, man, I wish I just looked more like one than the other, because it'd be a little bit more easy. And, you know, like even at 45, I go through that sometimes.
It doesn't go good. Newsflash, doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away, right? So it's not like I'm even denying my mixedness or saying that I legitimately want to deny any part of my heritage. It's not that.
No,
it's just that, yes, sometimes it would be easier, I think, because it's not my situation, to be less ambiguous. I don't know that that's the case, but that's how I feel in some moments.
Different things would happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I think ambiguous, that's the whole conversation.
So we've already kind of crossed over into this, but I want to throw this up so that we kind of get back onto it, the idea of what are the pros and cons
of black or mixed separation.
Yes.
And especially because in today's world, we have a couple forces at work. Keeping in mind, we have the government. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what I mean by that is you got the government, they control the census, and the census controls on a policy level, on a government level, on an allocation level, resources in this country that you wouldn't even think of. Hospitals, road work, schools, foods, access to life, to different resources of life. And so, you know, it still isn't clear how they're processing people who check some other race option versus monoracial, which is why some of us choose to do black or some other, not that we're denying our mixing. So we understand how the data is.
That's actually what you taught me. Resources.
Yes. And it's actually got to be knowledgeable. And the next one's 2030. So God willing, I'll still be here and good. I plan to call the census up and say, okay, explain to me how you're going to aggregate this data so people can make informed choices about the box they check or what they fill in.
Right.
But you got the government up here, remembering that the government, it's never neutral or benign. I know this sounds radical, but I'm a radical. Everything is designed to support the status quo, which is white supremacy and anti-blackness. And so if we're creating, let's do this. What are the pros and cons of mixed black separation? So with the mixed separatists, mm-hmm. and we're talking specifically mixed black separatists, with mixed black separatists, my question to them is, one question is, what is it that, I mean, affinity groups are one thing,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, again, all four of those, but in life, in world, if you're going to, whether it's a TikTok saying we don't need a separate national anthem while ignoring history and all the realities behind it, or if you're just going to start either being blatantly anti-Black or not being blatantly anti-Black, but just really working for this new category, for a separate category, what are the pros and cons?
I think one of the pros we kind of already sort of accidentally glazed over was a pro of a predominant, like say monoracial black space, using those general terms, is the safety moment, the safety and celebration potential opportunities that exist in those kind of spaces. Mm-hmm. I think there's a version of that also on the mixed side that Militantly Mix is even a part of, and Mixed Anti-Confidential is a part of too, where it's acknowledging our intersectionality and all this other kind of stuff. And so that I think things like that can be considered pros, where we have these moments of safety and context that we don't have to sit there and ask a bunch of questions for just to participate.
Right.
In those respects, and I guess quoting them as affinity groups, or affinity even events or moments or something like that is helpful in that. Give me this moment, this space to celebrate this separate category.
Yes.
That feels like a pro. If it's an expense at a different group, though, that's when I don't want to be a pro. Because here's what I want to do. I want to be able to walk into the mixed affinity group, the Black affinity group, and the Japanese and or Asian American affinity group, and be an equal participant across all of those groups.
Yes.
Understanding that for both the monoracial Black group and the Asian American and or Japanese group, there's different nuances in those situations in which I may not be a full citizen of those groups. That, again, goes back to the ego conversation. But I want to be able to, in general, be able to participate in any of those spaces because I'm a product of each of those categories.
Yes.
That's yes. Where I think the pro part or part of a pro is in giving us those moments.
I like that. I think too that affinity spaces, yes, but you want to watch it becoming official. You want to watch it becoming policy.
Because you mean like Juneteenth becoming a holiday, a federal holiday that everybody gets off?
Are you trying to trigger me?
But that's really, that would be an example to me.
That is an example. That is an example of, oh my God, every June I just, yeah.
It's you want to be like just below mainstream enough to where it's still ours, but like yes. Target won't make a napkin that says it's the freedom for me.
You want to be intentional. Yes. But exactly what we're saying. So with the mixedness, there's this sense that this is my language. There's a there that you can mm-hmm. touch and feel now. It's even though it's digital for the most part. It's you can see it. It's growing. It's super exciting. And it's inevitable that. Mm-hmm. But moving from the andness of mixedness and mixed Blackness to an either or-ness again, mm-hmm. pros and cons. So I think for the mixed Black separatists or the separatist concept, mm-hmm. meaning it's not just an affinity group. It's now a societal political category. And for that example, we have to look at the one that we know the most about, which is apartheid South Africa, which was the template they used was U.S. segregation and enslavement and reconstructions and Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear. They're cousins, where there is a whole category called colored, right? Yes. And it wasn't a perfect science. Family members were separated, not allowed to be, I mean, it was-
And colored cool. isn't the same definition as American colored, right, meaning no, just the category that Black not people fit in.
It's, good point, yeah.
It's its own ethnic-
It's not just one ethnic group either. It was completely phenotypic. You could have family members who were separated from and prevented by law from interacting with each other.
That's
so
right.
So hair texture, and they would just look at you and designate you.
Yeah.
They weren't there were no DNA tests being run. You weren't flipping out pictures of the parents and the grands, okay, or the sibs, okay.
Again, because over time, even colored people were supposed to marry and partner with other colored people.
Absolutely.
But like Black people and white people and colored and Black and colored and white.
Again, weaponized to support apartheid. But the other thing too, one of the biggest cons I see is that we are weaponized. We have always been weaponized against Black people and against Blackness. Even when we're privileged and prioritized because of colorism. Okay, it's never to the advantage of the Black collective.
Yes.
Never, ever, ever, not once.
No.
Never.
But it is always beneficial to whiteness or whiteness. White supremacy.
So we're literally weapons of whiteness against Blackness.
Yeah.
And so my biggest cautionary tale to both groups who might be creating their own lanes and really wanting to make this official in some kind of way mm-hmm. is, are you sure that's what you want? And the question is up now. And the other mixed, I don't even know if it's separate, but just.
It's so many generations, it's hard, but there's multiple categories
In Brazil, remember, important context, Brazil got the lion's share of the enslaved Africans through the transatlantic slave trade. Brazil got way more than any other country of the enslaved Africans. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Brazil's a huge country and there's a lot of diversity. So when you go there, and we all know this, I mean, this is kind of the brand of Brazil is the mulata, and there it's not, you know, considered a slur in the same way.
Things,
the ambiguous, the light, but it's still, again, it's colorist, it's anti-black. I mean, the hierarchy, the social hierarchy is the same pretty much throughout the diaspora that was created by this slave trade. So, you know, light on top, dark at the bottom, boom. There's no exceptions to that.
Yeah.
So again, but what you have in Brazil, and I found a list of it somewhere recently, and maybe I'll send it to you for the show notes, is the numerous categories. I couldn't even finish reading them without
it's
my
like
eyes.
Well over 50. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's...
Of people who were not identifying as black or white.
Yeah.
Now, I visited Brazil 13 years ago, and our guy, our first guide, still Facebook friends with her, Paula Santos, shout out, looks like me. Mm. About my age, looks like me. Very black identified. And she explained it to us. She said, and this was 13 years ago, y'all. She said, we are about where you were in the 60s with black consciousness movement. This is 2010 in Brazil. Where you were in the 1960s, and we're just starting to, many of us, to want to be more black identified. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's also going on under the surface. So when you go to Brazil, granted, if you look like us or if you're mixed, you're going to see maybe for the first time,
people that look like
bajillions of people who look like you. Yeah. Okay. I happen to live in a suburb of Marietta, Georgia, outside Atlanta or part of Atlanta, where there's a ton of Brazilians. There's Brazilian grocery stores. I had a Brazilian friend at my last job, my age, and we'd hang out. And she's Italian, white.
Okay.
Italian. Okay. And we walk into these places together, and a lot of the people who work there barely speak English. Some of them do, but some of them don't. You know, you in a Brazilian restaurant, a little grocery store, whatever. Yeah. And they'd look at me and start rattling off the Portuguese.
Yeah.
I'd be like, Gina.
And I only know one Portuguese word.
And I'm listening to her try to explain them to me, and they're side-eyeing the out of me like, Heffa, you know good and well.
Yeah.
You are Brazilian. Quit trying to play.
This is such a so weirdly specific to Latin and, you know, Latin American cultures.
They get mad. They stay mad at us. But
they
anyway.
Get mad, and it's like this weird wanting to claim you and also wanting to put down what you think you are.
Well, it's also anti-black, but yes.
It's so,
like,
weird.
Negra, mulata, like, I don't know what word to throw at them to make it make sense, but they're still like.
They're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know.
And exactly. So when I'm like, so is there cheese in that? They're like, girl, why are you playing? But anyway, Brazil. So I've been to Brazil. And people were like, oh, you're going to love it. You're going to want to stay there. I was like, well, I also went with a group of friends, all black group of women, my age, mostly the most African part of Brazil, because culturally and spiritually, and religiously, that's what I'm into. So,
right. Yeah.
Bahia. We were in Bahia and Salvador. But anyway, so no, not the more anglicized parts. Again, it's a humongous country and very diverse, but you're around a lot of people. My friends kept leaving me. Because they walk by me.
and you just look like other people. So they just
like, I was like, yeah. Too bad I can't speak Portuguese. I could just disappear. But anyway, but the point being, so in Brazil, you have all these, which I don't even understand. Like, you and I in Brazil might be in completely different categories. Me and my brother, you and your brother in Brazil might be in completely
different categories.
Okay.
And we've actually had a guest on Militantly Mixed from Brazil who described that, where like one parent is more obviously black, one parent is more obviously white. The white parent is trying to convince her, who looks obviously black, that she's more white, you know? And so there's like literal class, like where you're allowed to live, where you're allowed to participate community wise, what kind of jobs you can get.
Yes.
You know, all these categories, so that even like as they've lived away from Brazil and try to come back, the way they're treated is different again because of, the racial category aspect of the various mixed categories that they have. So I guess that goes into the question that we're asking, like, if this is the direction we're going, in American blackness and mixed blackness, what are we trying to adopt?
Yes.
Apartheid.
Yeah.
South Africa, or multiple classes of where you're allowed to participate in society.
Right.
Of Brazil.
Good point.
Because I don't know what it even to name what it's called in Brazil.
I don't either. Just Brazilness.
Yeah.
Because I think that's part of the brand of Brazil. When people think of Brazil, that's what they think of. I mean, the whole, we all know the image, you know. But so, good question. And I think too, those are the ones we know of.
There's probably so many other places that,
well, there might be, I don't know if there are that are in this diasporic dynamic, because you have to always remember the context of this is the diaspora, right? And the slave trade and enslavement and whatever came after, and here we are now. And the caution I would want to give me to both groups, and I don't know how the mixed separatist groups feel about this, but the caution I would want to give, especially to the Black gatekeeper groups, if you can hear me, is I don't know what your strategy is, what your end game is, or if this is just reactionary kind of emotionalism, but you want to be careful before things get encoded into policy, because again, all that can happen with both South Africa and Brazil as examples is we are going to be weaponized against you. And while we have always been weaponized against you, we've still been weaponized against you under the umbrella of Black and, of andness, not either orness. Maybe think about and do some research and ask yourselves, what would the weaponization be like under an official, codified, much more officially stratified system. Right. What's your end game? And you might not want to be throwing out the mixed Black people quite so quickly.
Right. And one of the things that we were talking about offline too is like, there's ways in which we can kind of see the directions of this kind of stuff going. One is in actually looking at other countries that have some form of this, like South Africa or Brazil. But there's also like fantasy dystopia. Because that's like something that we do, right? As creative people create this dystopic thing based off of what they see is happening. And that's how you get stories like the Hunger Games that literally divide this country up into 12 districts. And one of those districts had clearly all Black folks, and they were all some kind of laborer, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was their responsibility within that district. And so when we start to talk about separatism in some kind of way, and mind you, I want to say this, and I try to say this every time, I think that the idea of this was originally coming from a good place of wanting to have some sort of community, you know, space and things like that. I think a lot of this kind of stuff does become bastardized over time when, you know, especially with the internet, the way something can turn, or the way when outsiders participate, it kind of goes downhill or whatever. And so now we're starting to see that more separatism at the expense of a different group, which is the part that I don't want to participate in, the part I don't want to be comfortable in, and the part that, and the few times it's happened where someone on the outside has messaged me to try to get me on team separatist in some way, shape, or form, that I don't feel like I even know how to communicate to somebody who needs that kind of separatism, you know. So I don't know that I'm necessarily the right person to be contacting at this point, because you're not going to get that from me. Right. So when I think about like what we can see happening, look at what's happening just in our current political structure, right? We went from having our first technically mixed race president, but politically Black, viewed as a Black president, right? And then immediately extreme white supremacist oligarch and all that, that kind of stuff.
Blatant.
Like so blatant, such a blatant flip. And because of that major flip, now we have Roe v. Wade out of, you know, off.
Exactly.
Books. You have senators openly saying in the Senate House or in the House of Representatives and so Congress people too, openly saying we want hangings back. We want to separate interracial relationships.
Yes.
We've had people in interracial relationships voting against interracial relationship.
Yes. Like,
we're already seeing the dystopia of the future fantasy novels coming to light right Good now. Point. And Good it's point. Because we're allowing, it's not, and I'm not blaming that kind of stuff on this specific, but it's just it's a slippery slope thing that can be happening with these kind of ideologies. Yes. The gun-toting ideology of the past has now kind of led us to this mass shootings in school all the time type of thing. It's a weird slippery slope thing that happens, and you just have to pick something to be separatist about and look into the future 5-10 years down the road, and then you start to see some of the stuff that happening. And so my concern about something like that, like, listen, I always hate to say things about pride when it comes to like racial identity, but in the way in which I'm proud of my people as a collective, there's things that I'm proud about Black people as a collective that I'm also sad I have to be proud about. You know, like, I don't want to be proud that we're resilient as a people. Right. I think it's horrible that we're resilient as a people. We should never have had to have been resilient as a people. Exactly. And yet I'm proud that we've managed to survive this long, that we haven't disappeared off the face of the planet. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of this stuff is kind of positive, negative simultaneously to me. Mm-hmm. And while I do want sometimes to participate in separate spaces in the affinity kind of way, what I don't want that to lead to is that there might be a time where I might never be able to see someone in my literal family because they've now put up a chain link fence between us.
Thank you. Or, yeah, that's very profound. That is very profound. And also, you've talked about the personal. I want to talk about the political. Where does the end game? Mm-hmm. I want to warmly encourage the folks who are on these tracks, these separatist tracks, mixed separatist and Black separatist tracks, to consider the dynamic of being pitted against each other, mm-hmm. fighting each other, considering each other the enemy, mm-hmm. versus joining forces, finding ways to work through all these complex issues and nuances and isms that have historically been created to divide us and pit us against each other and keep us focused on beef with each other versus going, wait a minute, we have a common enemy.
Literally being the tool of white supremacy.
Literally being the tools, and then weaponizing ourselves against each other voluntarily. I mean, it's been done to us for centuries, but now voluntarily, that's white supremacy. That's white supremacy on autopilot, right? Yeah. On cruise control.
I think that's why, too, like, adopting the idea of people of the global majority versus people of color.
Yes.
When you see the numbers.
Yes.
There are more brown folks.
folks. Supremacy still manages to reign even in countries where it's not
obvious. Where it's predominantly brown. Yeah, yeah.
Even where there's no white people in charge.
So yes, yes.
Now we have all been programmed by the same thing. So that's what I'm saying. Yes, I want you all to consider, as you consider the pros and the cons of your end game, to consider whether this is ultimately a good idea, or future generations will be real upset at you for not building unity and solidarity despite difficulties and differences and the isms that have kept us at each other's throats for centuries, that were designed to keep us at each other's throats. Because as long as we're at each other's throats, we're not unified. We're not fighting the enemy. Right. And so.
And your surprise if the mission succeeds and separatism exists and you're on the opposite side of the fence than you thought you would have been on.
Ooh.
I mean, would that not be terrifying to a person who had such a hard line in the sand?
Right. I mean, yeah. I love that. What are the pros and cons of these really hard lines? And are you, and what are you, what's your real agenda? Because again, we know that for some of the mixed separatists, and, you know, I see them literally every day in these 5 million Facebook groups and on Instagram too, less on Instagram. That's more presentational. People aren't really, you know, sharing deep innermost thoughts and all that. But I see it a lot. I see it constantly. And well, you're not Black. You can't, there's so much either or-ness. You can't, are you, somebody asked me, are you mixed or are you Black? And I just went into baby. You know what? It ain't either or. That's
both of them.
It's not either or, but for them, their process, they've decided it's either or.
Yeah.
Right. They've decided it's either or. I'm not trying to change their reality, their perspective, their worldview, or anything else. Maybe that's fine for you, but don't be, again, don't try to retrofit me.
Yeah.
Into a lane, you know, it's like trying to put the square peg in the round hole.
Yeah.
Like I'm not your round peg, boo.
We're not going to fit that. And the way in which we would infuriate people, and I think we probably have in different ways, infuriate people by not falling in line when it comes to, you should just toe this line. Like, you're just never going to get me on something like that. So I don't know how to be helpful to you. All I can say is that I'm both of them.
Yeah.
I'm all of them.
It's a both. It's an and. It's not it's an anymore. And.
Actually, speaking of and, shout out to Mosaic, the label. Brittany Pogue Muhammad, who was on the show back in November or October. Mosaic, the label, is a mixed branded clothing apparel line and things like that. She has a design right now that is just the and symbol.
Oh.
And they have it on clothes, they have it on mugs and things like that. Need to get that. You know, about like the inclusiveness. I also just ordered and I'm waiting for it to come. It's a t-shirt that the design is right here on the collar, and it's in small letters it says, "Ask me about why I don't look black."
Oh, can I? Okay, well,
I'm gonna send you a link. And I'll put a link in the show notes too, because shout out to Brittany, the clothing line that she created just so that her child could see themselves in things have grown into a much bigger brand. And with that focus of and not either or, I think is actually literally present in the current line of clothing that is up.
I love that. And the ampersand. On that website, but y'all ask yourselves, what is the end game? Because I feel like we're at a crossroads.
We could go either direction, and right now everything looks scary.
Everything looks scary. And like you said, if you were literally on the other side of, and this happened in South Africa, y'all, do your homework. You got Google or whatever your favorite search engine is. Do your homework about apartheid South Africa. Once these things become codified into law and become part of policy, okay, and become official, you no longer have the rights you thought you had. Mm-hmm. You lost all your legal swagger.
And look, like in apartheid South Africa, people died constantly trying to fight against that kind of division. Yes. People lost their life for the fight.
Yes.
People were in prison like Mandela for years and years and years to try to be considered human in the eyes of the law. Yes. We're always fighting for to be seen as human in the eyes of the law, regardless of what your non-cisgendered white heterosexual male thing is in this country specifically. As long as you're not a cisgendered white male, all of us at some point have our humanity in question. And the law policing what we're allowed to do with our own bodies, where we're allowed to go with our own bodies. This is not just a racial issue. This is a gender issue. This is a sexuality issue. This is humanity issue across the board. And the way that we're specifically talking about it today does have to do with how this idea of either black gatekeeping or mixed separatism or the combination of the two, you know, working hand in hand but not together thing that we talked about earlier, is doing the work. Again, it's doing the work of white supremacy. The patriarchy is doing the work for them so that they're on autopilot at this point. They don't even actively have to do anything because we're doing it ourselves. If that's the end game, then they will always have us. And that's what we are trying to fight against. So I guess we bring all this up just to say, to be thinking about, like, you might go into something with an open heart. And I think, I mean, even the stuff that we've created separately, we can make those kind of arguments too. You go into it with an open heart, you hope to be inclusive and things like that. And every now and then something external pops up and you're like, whoa, nope, that wasn't what I was doing. I don't know what you're doing. Don't put my name on that.
Yes.
You know, that kind of stuff can happen. And, you know, it's important to try to be clean with your language and clear and things like that with your intent. But at the same time, it can get away from you. So you have to be really careful about the kinds of things that you participate in, because you might just be going because you just want to see other mixed people who look like you and have that emotional moment. And then next thing you know, you might be in this, like, now we're in chain link fences because they separated, they physically separated us apart, you know?
Yes, really good point.
That's
really
that's the kind of things, you know, like I'm a Japanese, I'm a mixed Japanese person, but my generation of Japanese-ness comes post internment, Japanese internment here in the United States. Most of the people that were interned in the United States were predominantly multi-generational American Japanese at that point. And yet, they were still separated because they didn't look like the white American. And there were people on the other sides of those fences. There were white partners that weren't interned, but their partners were interned. Their children were interned. Absolutely. There was literal people on the other side of the fence. Yes. This is something that really happened in this country. Less than 100 years ago. You don't even have to look at South Africa if you don't want to. You don't even have to look at Brazil. You don't have to look at these other places. We literally had it here during enslavement, literally pulled away, sold off, moved around. There's so many ways in which we've been divided already to kind of keep doing that ourselves, even if it is under the guise of wanting to be around like in some way, shape, or form. There, you know, there's a danger in how you operate.
I think we can be around like.
We can.
Without creating.
At the expense of, or right. to the.
Right.
Exclusion in a negative way. Because I think there's the positive exclusion and the negative exclusion, which we kind of talked about at the beginning of this episode.
And I there think are, it is, yeah. No, I love what you're saying. It has to do with consciousness, clarity, and intention.
Yeah.
And always being aware, and I know I'm willing to be the broken record here, y'all. And you can say I sound like a crazy person, that's perfectly fine.
Oh, I say a lot of the same shit over and over on every episode.
always being aware that at the foundation of this, and what is still driving our government to this day, is that axis of white supremacy and anti-blackness. It doesn't matter if you believe that's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's just like climate change. It doesn't matter if you believe in climate change. I've got trees outside my window on March 3rd sprouting buds. They should not be sprouting buds on March 3rd. Okay, but the point is to always keep in mind that white supremacy, anti-blackness, and just check what you're thinking, feeling, considering, doing, saying, how you're moving through the world against that grid. Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, this is not to shame or blame anybody. This is not to make anyone feel bad. And this is not to tell anybody how to identify, how to move Mm-mm. through the world, how to affiliate, how to affinity, how to do anything. It's just, please be conscious and aware that there are consequences, possibly unanticipated and unforeseen. And thank mm-hmm. you for sharing that very vibrant visual of the Japanese internment and the chain link fence visual with us, Charmaine, which is still people very much alive who experience.
Well, yeah. I mean, George Takei has written a whole graphic novel about it. You can see, well, maybe not specifically what I mentioned, but.
Yeah. So. And that's still very real. So thank you. No, thank you for that visual, because for some of us, it's kind of vague and hard to imagine. And we haven't, you know, South Africa, da, da, da.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, right here, baby.
Especially because you still hear people say, like, that's not my America. Like, what's happening in today? Right. Da, 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 that's not my America.
It literally
can go back to 50 years back, 75 years back, 100 years back. Like, you can multiple times.
And it is America. America's never not been this way.
And
it's hard and painful and ugly and difficult to, you know, to really see it for what it is. But we can't. My favorite James Baldwin quote is, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced.
And that is a perfect place to end this episode. We want to hear what your thoughts are about all the topics that we talk about on the Mixanti Confidential, but specifically with the idea of separatism versus affinity, I guess. Hit us up on anchor.fm/militantlymix. You can leave a voice message, or of course, you can always just send an email to charmaine@militantlymix.com or teresa@militantlymix.com. We both got the militantlymix.coms.
Yes.
And let us know your thoughts, and we can bring it back up on a later episode of the Mixanti Confidential. This is the last Mixanti Confidential before I go on the mental health hiatus of April. I'm also moving out of the country during that time. So the next time we will be back together will be May 2023. I don't know why I was looking for a date in my head. I don't have it. I didn't look at the calendar. I don't know what the date is, but it's in May. You'll see us the second week of May. And until then, be mixed ass selves, y'all.
Yes. With intention.
With intention, not to the exclusion of everybody else.
Militantly Mix is a Main Hustle Media podcast produced and hosted by me, Charmaine Fury. Music is by David Bogan, the One. You can follow us on social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Militantly Mixed. If you'd like to become a sponsor of Militantly Mixed, please go to patreon.com/militantlymixed for monthly sponsorship or paypal.me/militantlymixed for a one-time only donation. And if you like what you hear on Militantly Mixed, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to be your mixed ass self. Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.